As you all might know, my name is Stephen Loftus. I'm a PhD candidate at Virginia Tech, and today I'm going to be presenting on BxWoba, or a Bayesian approach to expected WoBA. Now, before we really get kind of started in this, I'm going to give you a motivational example just to get us in the mindset of what I'm trying to talk about here, and we're going to do so in the form of America's favorite game. No, not name that, Melina. Player A or Player B. So be ready to participate. Be ready to form a very quick opinion here. We got two players here, and I give you some slash lines to work with. We have player A slashed here a line of roughly around 300, 430, 580. You know, solid line, any of us would take it. However, you have player B, who is absolutely raking with a 360 average, 420 on base, 650 slugging. I know, very little information, but that's what we have. So just quickly, let's see, by show of hands, who takes, we have option one, player A. Anyone? Player A? Okay, option two, player B. Okay, there's a third option I should probably mention. You didn't give us enough information, and we know you're trying to trick us, so we're going to take option three. Anyone? Option three? Everyone should be raising your hands at this point. Because, yeah, I'm leaving out a little information. So, who is player A and who's player B? You all know player A pretty well. You all know his name. He is Joc Pederson, Dodgers prospect, who put up those numbers in around 550 plate appearances in the Pacific Coast League. The second guy, a little lesser known, few of y'all might know who he is a prospect in the Indians organization, Bobby Bradley, put up his numbers in about 175 plate appearances down in the Rookie League. Now, this is not meant to pump up Joc Pederson or to knock down Bobby Bradley. That's not the point at all. So what is the point? The point is something that you all know very well, that all numbers, all statistics need context. They need to be considered in light of various things such as league, plate appearances, all this sort of stuff. And by doing so, we generally try to, in many situations, try to adjust these statistics to take into account this context. And oftentimes, the most common things that we adjust for are things like park, era, position. We see park in weighted runs created plus. We see era just in, well, any plus minus statistics, so we can try to put them on the same scale so we could compare, say, Barry Bonds to Babe Ruth's numbers. And then even in something like wins above replacement, you see the positional adjustments to, once again, try to put everything on the same scale, put everything roughly within the same context. But my question is, what about opponents? What about the opponents that players have to play over an unbalanced schedule that Major League Baseball has? Rarely do you see these things adjusted for. Now, it might be that over a 162-game season that, you know, you might think that luck and all will wash these, we'll just kind of wash this out. But I still think that opponent really needs to be considered and taken into a context when you're looking at any statistics that you're looking at. And that's where I'm going with this idea of BxWoba. So just a quick outline. I'm going to start out by talking about expected and adjusted WoBA, what I even mean by these topics, and why do we even need to consider them. Then kind of go into the methodology, how we're going to be calculating expected WoBA, how we're going to be adjusting for defense. Then take a look at some results just from a case study from 2013-2014. And then kind of conclude with where I would like to go with BxWoba in the future, given the data and given some computing power. So the statistic that we're working with, one that we all know very well, WOBA, probably one of the more commonly known sabermetric statistics, developed by Tom Tango, and what it gives us is a weighted sum of most all the batting components of offense. And these can be divided up into two categories. Generally speaking, ones that relate to the pitcher versus the hitter alone, the kind of fielding independent pitching components, things such as walks, hit batters, home runs, strikeouts. Now, I know that strikeouts are not explicitly in the WOBA formula, but they're there in the denominator The other half of the components are pitcher and defense versus the batter, and these are basically the balls in play. If this is sounding very similar to Ben Jedlevec's presentation earlier this morning, there are some similarities. We're looking at doing some very similar things. Instead of looking at the results that we see, instead of relying on the results that did happen, we're really looking more at trying to adjust or taking a look at the expectation of WOBA. When I'm talking about the expectation, I mean what should have happened. What should have happened on that hard ground ball down the line when Manny Machado backhands it, drops it, picks it up, throws out the runner at first? What should have happened? Probably most instances should not have been an out. And when I'm talking about adjusting, I'm talking about, once again, baseball doesn't play a balanced schedule, so how would we account for the fact that these players play different opponents, different defenses, and face different pitchers? And once again, I cannot reiterate enough. Overall, we're trying to, once again, not rely on what actually happened. So why can't we rely on what actually happened? So many things, you know, seeing is believing, trust the results, that sort of thing. Why can't we rely on this? Well, the answer to that question is the answer to the same question of why do we even need to kind of look at the expectation of results? And that, simply put, is sample size. Now, we know that baseball is one of the few things where having 600 observations probably, depending on the statistic you're looking at, might not be enough. If I went back to Virginia Tech and told my advisor, okay, we got 600 observations. We don't have enough. We need a lot more. I would get a very interesting look out of her. A lot of times we'd kill for 600 observations. But in baseball, this can oftentimes not be enough. And this is generally because, for players, convergence to their true talent level is really, really daggone slow. How slow would you ask? As I feel like some type of stand-up thing. How slow is it type of thing? So, how slow? If you take a batter's average balls in play profile in terms of percentage of outs, percentage of singles, doubles, triples, so on, and then look at the average number of balls in play for a qualified player over a season, the difference between their best expected, reasonably expected season and their worst reasonably expected season is the difference between Jose Abreu's WOBA and Ben Revere's WOBA. We're talking some drastically different players. So hopefully the idea is that in using the expectation, we kind of cut down on the variability at least a little bit. So that's why we're looking with expectation. Why do we even need to consider then adjusting for opponents' defenses? Doesn't this just kind of wash out? Well, once again, I say it doesn't. I mean, you might say it does, but for the purposes of this conversation, we're going to say it doesn't. So, once again, differing schedules, unbalanced schedule, and even if Major League Baseball went to a balanced schedule, batters would face different pitchers. They would face different defenses at any point in time. So then the question becomes, how does defense wind up affecting WOBA? Well, there's the obvious way that defense affects WOBA, and that's through making a play or not making a play. But you don't need to make a great catch like Lorenzo Cain is making there, or play defense like Lucy Van Pelt generally plays to affect WOBA. A lot of times it's something much more subtle. It can be something like the Kansas City Royals outfield running down a ball in the gap, keeping a runner at first, or Yasiel Puig's arm keeping a runner at first. So we have to consider these when we're modeling the expectation. So that's basically the why we need to think about expectation, why we need to think about adjusting WOBA. Now the question becomes, how are we going to go about this? So we're going to start out by how we're going to calculate an expected WOBA. So the first thing is to consider what data do we have? What are we working with? The data that I'm working with in this case for this study is quote-unquote hit location data. I say quote-unquote because it's the MLB Advanced Media data, which is not truly hit location, but we're having to use it as a proxy for this because it's, as far as I know, the only publicly available data that is out there. So that's the data, and we're going to use that using a radial basis spline to create our predictors to try to model the result of an at-bat. Further, what's our response is? Our response is that we're trying to model is the result of the ball in play. So it's what could be called a multinomial response, so four levels. You have the result of a ball in play can be an out, a single, a double, or a triple. Now, I know errors do exist, but for WOBA formulation, error, generally speaking, or at least for this purposes, are getting lumped in with outs. Further, this is not just a multinomial response, it's what's called an ordinal response. So in other words, it can be ordered. You can make the argument that a single is better than an out, double's better than a single, triple better than a double. And we're going to use this ordinal nature to try to take advantage of a certain Bayesian technique that I'm about to get to. So there are, generally speaking, two ways that you can model an ordinal response, and these two kind of come out of which philosophy of statistics you kind of prefer. On the classical end of things, you can work with a multinomial logit or probit model. And this works with comparing or modeling the log odds of a result compared to a baseline. So modeling the log odds of a single compared to an out, a double compared to an out, a triple compared to an out. Now this gives you three sets of coefficients, and for that reason, along with the fact that I tend to lean Bayesian as a statistician, I don't want to work with this classical multinomial logit model. Instead, I'm going to work with a Bayesian data augmentation model that was first kind of proposed by Albert and Chibb in 1993. And this works with latent variables in order to model a response. I would love to take time to talk about latent variables, but we're getting close to lunch, everyone's getting hungry, and I have 20 minutes, so I'm unfortunately going to have to leave that out. If you have any questions about it, I would be more than happy to talk to you later on. So once again, we're going to use this Bayesian data augmentation model of Albert and Chibb, and that's basically it. Once again, this is among the things that I would love to talk about for a while, but once again, don't have a ton of time. Take my word on it that it is an entirely conjugate model. It can be fit very nicely by an MCMC sampler called a Gibbs sampler, which is very fast, very efficient. And what the sampler will actually wind out giving us when it's all said and done, you wind out getting a distribution of parameters, all those Greek letters that you saw up there, from this distribution of parameters, you'll then get distribution of probabilities. So for each ball in play, you'll get a distribution of what's the probability that it was an out, a single, double, triple, so on. And then from this, we can actually calculate a distribution of WOBA to get kind of an expected WOBA, and that's where we're getting that BX WOBA idea from. So that's how we're actually going to calculate the expected WOBA, or the X part of X WOBA. Now the question becomes, how do we adjust? How do we account for defenses? How do we make it, in all honesty, a little bit more predictable for future results? So there's a few ways we could go about it. The first and possibly the best way would be the performance based on a player's average position that they face for defense. So unfortunately, as we know, this data is not necessarily available. Who knows, if StatCast becomes public, this might be a whole new realm to go with, but until then, we gotta work with what we have. So we can't use that idea. We could just regress straight up to the mean, but the problem with that is, once again, we're trying to adjust for defense. So a straight up regression to the mean might overly penalize players who are a little bit harder to defend. So it's a little easier to defend against David Ortiz, so he might suffer a little bit more regression than, say, like a Derek Jeter, who is generally a bit more of an all-fields hitter. So that leads us to the third way, and the way that I'm going to be going about in this presentation, augment the data. And this is a different augmentation than the data augmentation from Albert and Chip, and I'm sorry for the kind of overlap, but that was the best term I could think of for what I'm doing here. So what we're going to do is we're going to essentially add to the data set. We're going to add comparable players to the individual that we're looking at. And by comparable, we want similar batting profiles. We want similar percentages of ground balls, line drives, fly balls. But most importantly, we want similar hit location distribution. So for example, we got two players here. We have the aforementioned Derek Jeter and the aforementioned David Ortiz. You would not necessarily want them to be considered comparable players. Among other reasons, Ortiz is left-handed, Jeter's right-handed, but in general, also Ortiz tends to be a bit more of a pull hitter, Jeter a little bit uses a bit more of the field. It would be more appropriate, really, for someone like Jeter to be compared to, say, Yadier Molina, another right-handed batter, and a little bit more even distribution across the whole field. Pardon me for a second. Okay, so it's... So you could go through each individual player, look at tons of graphs, and say this person's comparable, this person's not. But that's a really subjective thing. We would like an objective number, a weight, to determine whether a player is comparable or not. And since we're comparing distributions, anyone who knows me or has seen anything I've written when it comes to that knows that first thing I'm going to run off to, and it's true in this case, I'm going to be looking at using the Kolmogorov-Smirnov, or KS, test, and using its test statistic, which looks for the largest maximal difference, the largest absolute difference, excuse me, between empirical CDFs of two samples. The problem is that the KS test is for univariate data, and we have bivariate location data. So we're kind of going to move to what's more a bivariate version of the KS test. So instead of looking for the largest difference between two lines, we're going to be looking for the largest difference across two planes, so something more towards what you see on the right. So once we actually calculate these weights, it's then a question of how do we use them? Well, we're going to use them to draw individual plays from each player. So you have the player that you're interested in. Say you have Derek Jeter. You put all his data aside. Then you look at the entire rest of all balls in play across majors and across the majors. And you draw an individual play, a subset of individual plays, based on that weight that you calculated on the previous slide. Now, a reasonable question is, won't this data choice bias the results? It might be that you choose, essentially, that you choose bad data. And this is true if you were only making the choice of data one single time. So what we're going to do to avoid this bias is we're going to essentially stochastically integrate out the data choice, the effect of data choice. And this is not quite entirely a Bayesian idea. It could be made a Bayesian idea, but don't tell my advisor that one. So at each iteration of the sampler, what we're actually going to do is we're going to select instar data points for augmentation. So we do that by using the weights and the method that I described just last slide. And then we're going to actually draw from the full conditional. So we're going to actually run a single iteration of the Gibbs sampler that we defined from the hierarchical model a few times back. And we keep on iterating that until convergence. And for the data set that I've been working with and the results, it burns in pretty darn quickly. I could spend a lot of time talking about that, but I'm stopping myself here. So moving on to actually the results, the things that we really care about, how did this actually wind out doing? So in taking a look at 2013, you had the average, say I was looking at the 97 players who qualified for batting title both in 2013 and 2014, because we're looking at how things correlate, how 2013 BX WOBA will correlate with 2014 actual WOBA. And we find that the BX WOBA has a comparable mean, a comparable standard deviation, and it's important to note here that BX WOBA is not constant. In other words, if you run one time of BX WOBA for a player and then run it a second time, it's very unlikely that you're going to get the exact same answer. However, the variability, the difference across it is really negligible, honestly just really negligible. And on average, the absolute difference between player's actual WOBA and their BX WOBA is around 8 points, roughly. But once again, this is all nice, but we're really interested in how does it wind up predicting future results. So we're going to take a look at just simple, how's it correlating with 2014? That's the extent that I've looked at so far in terms of prediction. So actual WOBA correlating with 2014, actual WOBA, get a correlation of about 0.50. But when you take a look at BX WOBA, we get a slightly higher correlation, about 0.55. Now, this is really just an incremental progress, but it's also important to consider what hasn't been done with BX WOBA. First of all, I haven't in any way accounted for adjusting the FIP components of BX WOBA at all. I haven't taken a look at adjusting walks, hit batters, adjusting strikeouts, adjusting home runs. And also, once again, we're not actually using true hit location data. And I think if given hit location data and given time to work on adjusting the FIP components of BX WOBA, I think it would be reasonable to expect a increase in the correlation, maybe up to, 0.6, 0.65, maybe even 0.7, depending on the model. So that really kind of covers where I'd like to go in the future. Once again, I'd like to work with better true hit location data, not fielding location data. But if that data is not available, I would probably take a look into possibly using what's called an errors and variables model, which says, okay, yeah, the fielder fielded the ball right here, but based on the other data that we see, based on the coefficients, based on all the parameters, it's more likely that the ball actually landed 20 feet in front and then bounced and then he caught it, as opposed to the ball actually landing in this location here. And then once again, I would also like to kind of go into adjusting the FIP components, the walks, home runs, and all, for full inclusion into kind of a more rounded BX WOBA stat that includes everything. So that pretty much kind of wraps up everything I'm going to talk about. These are just the quick statistical references, excellent references. If any of y'all are interested, I can point you in the direction of some others, but wonderful things to consider. And I'd also like to thank a couple of people. I'd like to thank my advisor, Dr. Leanna House, who gave me a few weeks off from my dissertation to work on this, Ms. Michelle Gervasio, who allowed me a little bit of computing time on her computer to do some of the harder work, and also the Virginia Tech Stats Department for one, teaching me half this stuff, and two, also giving me access to some of the more powerful computing tools that they have. And once again, thank you all for your time, and I will now welcome any questions if we have time for it. Yeah?
Can you account for the quality of the pitcher?
In terms of the balls in play, that has not been done yet, but that is another one of the things that hopefully, given a little bit more time, a little bit more computing power, because I have a feeling once you start adding in that variable and start trying to maybe get into a quality of pitch type of thing, it's going to ramp up the computing a little bit. So it's something I would like to do, yes. Anyone else? I would believe it can. So far, I've only looked at qualified players. And I mean, there's no question the variability as the sample size is smaller is going to increase. There's just no question about that. But I think it would be very reasonable to include covariates, because I mean, the spline basis is very, very, very flexible in that regard. I think it would be reasonable to include a parameter for level for, well, less a parameter for sample size, but a parameter for level. Sample size might be a little bit more difficult to get at.
Okay, if there's no other questions, let's go to lunch.